Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you.
Calgary-based TC Energy has been hired to work on revised designs for the planned Prince Rupert gas transmission pipeline. The PRGT route is intended to stretch nearly 900 kilometers from northeast BC to a site at Wilt Millet on Pierce Island on the west coast and supply natural gas to Asia. Originally owned by Enbridge, the West Coast Connector and PRGT initially received their environmental assessment certificates in 2014, which expire next year. In March of this year, the BC government introduced new environmental standards for LNG projects in a bid to spur net zero emissions of greenhouse gases by 2030, for which this 10-year-old proposal, purchased by TC Energy, has not been assessed under these new standards. It's called SILISMS, and the three partners in this project are Western LNG, LNG Rockies, and the Nisga'a Nation. SILISMS plans to use two floating facilities to produce liquefied natural gas. If successful, the project will deploy other vessels to ship LNG to Asia, starting exports by nearly 2028, vastly increasing tanker traffic in the Prince Rupert port. Today, I'm speaking with Graham Pohl, a photographer and writer who lives in Kispeyox Valley and is part of the Kispeyox Valley Center Community Association, who presented a climate-focused speech on Monday, November 21st in Kispeyox about the threats of continuing to support fossil fuel projects. Graham spoke to me this week from Kispeyox. Can you tell me about the Kispeyox Valley Community Centers Association's history with LNG as far as your involvement?
Yeah, so the Valley Association represents residents of the Valley and property owners in the Valley, some of whom aren't resident. About 240 people is our rough count. So in 2013-14, when the Prince Rupert Gas Transmission Project and the West Coast Gas Connector Project, two pipelines, came onto the map to service proposed LNG plants on the coast. Life in the Valley got disrupted by, you know, the forerunners of an industrial presence, lots of, you know, pickup trucks and crews and quads and helicopters and all kinds of stuff that it just showed up all of a sudden, and nobody really knew what was going on. And we started to dig and found out that there's these two pipelines being surveyed to possibly come through our neighborhood. So a bunch of us organized to get public information out, basically, on what was going on, what the risks were, what we weren't being told, because we weren't being told much. As part of that, we formed a website called No More Pipelines, which put up information, both local and sort of regional and global, about the LNG industry. So those two pipelines were approved in 2014. One runs along the Babine and crosses the Skeena and Kispeyox Valley. The other, the one that's in play now, the Prince Rupert Gas Transmission Project, comes down the Suskwa and cuts over the shoulder of Sedina Mountain and crosses the Skeena and the Kispeyox that way. So those pipelines never went away. They were approved and they were kind of sleeping, and I just would keep my eye on them. And then this past summer, with the SILISMS LNG plant under consideration in the Nass Valley, they need, obviously, to get the gas there, so they had to choose a pipeline. And the West Coast Gas Connector went through an application process to shorten their route, so that made the news. And then that pipeline was dropped, and SILISMS chose the Prince Rupert Gas Transmission Project, which, and I'm not exaggerating, for some residents in the Valley here, it would be almost in their backyards. It's a threat socially, environmentally, to all of us. And in 2016, the majority of the residents of the Valley endorsed something we call the Kispeyox Valley Declaration, which, as much as says, along with other things that are positive about what we hold dear here, it says the oil and gas industry is not welcome. So now the Kispeyox Valley Community Center Association is raising its voice to say that this pipeline should not be built. It's the pipeline itself is not actually up for grabs at the moment. It is approved. It could be built anytime. The pipeline depends on the LNG plant, so you can't separate the two. So this proposal for the LNG plant has galvanized the pipeline again in our consciousness. So we're saying no to the LNG plant because it's a bad thing to do in this day and age to build another large fossil fuel project. And we're also saying no locally because it would ruin what we know and love about this place and why we live here.
Would you be able to give our listeners a bit of a scope of the Salism's project, so companies involved and areas affected as well?
Okay, so the Salism's project, the proponents there are three. There's the Nisga'a First Nation. There's an outfit called Rockies LNG, which is a consortium of gas producers, drillers, basically, in Alberta and BC. And then there's Texas-based Western LNG. The plant itself would be a floating LNG facility off the north end of Pierce Island, which is about 15 kilometers west of Kincolith. So it's just out on the edge of the mouth of the Nass Valley, adjacent to Portland Canal, and interestingly, about 2 kilometers from the U.S. border. The pipeline itself would start in northeastern BC and be about 800 kilometers long. So again, the LNG plant, and this is one of the things they do with these projects. It's called project splitting. So the LNG plant isn't considering the effects of the pipeline, and the BC Environmental Assessment Office is not requiring it to consider the effects of the pipeline. Those are considered to be already addressed by the fact the pipeline was approved 10 years ago. So although the footprint, you could say, well, that's, floating LNG facility. Yeah, they're going to mess up the Nisga'a Gulf there at the mouth of the Nass a bit. They've got to put 20 kilometers of pipeline on the ocean floor. Yeah, there's some risk there, but it's kind of localized. Well, it's not. That 800-kilometer corridor stretches across northwestern BC, goes through two of the most productive salmon-producing river systems on the planet, and also bisects the range of woodland caribou isolated populations, which are federally endangered species, and which are now already dealing with the Coastal GasLink pipeline going through their habitat, and now there's going to be another pipeline proposed. So the impacts are far-reaching, and in temporal scale, some of them are permanent. I mean, if we lose the caribou, we lose the caribou. If we pollute the rivers and, change the water regime so that the salmon can't use them the way they are using them, and they're having trouble at the moment with all the stresses, we could lose salmon.
Now, you did mention a little bit about the pipeline literally being in people's backyard, but before I was recording this conversation, we were also just talking about the change in lifestyle if a pipeline does go through a landscape such as the Skeena region, and I guess more specifically the Kispiox Valley. So would you kind of share what some of the real life changes would be in effects if this pipeline is approved and it goes through the Kispiox Valley?
Sure. So mobility is one thing. There'd be single lane radio controlled traffic. There'd be the possibility of checkpoints run by private security. There would have to be changes made to the roads and bridges. So there'd be those kind of impingements on people's properties. The roads are sprayed with a dust retardant that, from my experience going on the Maurice Road, it creates rust where there didn't used to be rust. Then there's the uses you have in the landscape, for hunting, fishing, trapping, hiking, firewood, gathering wild foods. Most people use the Forest Service roads. Those would be bisected now by the pipeline, and there would be work camps, and you wouldn't be able to go on those roads. Moose are in decline in our area, and the pipeline documentation says there would be a 10.3% decline in winter moose habitat in the Kispiox Valley. So you think, 10.3, well, that's a stress in the winter that kills moose, but 10.3%, that's a significant impact to a habitat. There would be hydrocarbon spills, herbicide application along the pipeline. The quantity and quality of the wild foods, particularly fish and wildlife, would be impacted by those things. There would be no rental housing available. Property taxes would go up. There'd be two man camps in the Kispiox Valley, 1,800 people. So there'd be an increase in crime, including property theft, an increase in illicit drug use, and that would fuel addictions among the workers that would last after the pipeline construction moves on. And this next thing, this isn't fear-mongering. This is well-documented. It's even documented in the Salism's project description. increased risks to the safety of female residents. And numerous studies have shown this to be especially true for Indigenous women. So do we want to bring that to where we live? Mm-hmm. The local cost of living would go up. 911 services would be unable to respond adequately to the workload. Grocery stores, pharmacy, hospital emergency room, clinic would be overwhelmed. The landfill would not be able to process the waste from the project, so they actually have a plan to burn a lot of their waste. Residents could be profiled by the RCMP and by private security, which actually works as a de facto RCMP. It did on Coastal GasLink. Those are just some of the things that could happen to, you know, daily life. The thing that we learned on Coastal GasLink, and we're still learning with Coastal GasLink, the BC Environmental Assessment Office, the BC Energy Regulator, DFO, the Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency, none of them, I'll say this, have the balls to do what they're supposed to do with these projects. They let the proponents get away with something that if you or I did, in terms of messing with a salmon bearing river, we'd have fines. DFO would be on your doorstep next day to fine you and cart you away. But Coastal GasLink, it didn't really happen. DFO walked away from the project and had no oversight. They won't take on these industries. And when they fine them, the fine is so minuscule. The industry just built it in as a cost of doing business. Oh, we're going to get a fine for this or that. Let's just do it anyway. So there is no deterrent to the industry to carry on responsibly, or even, I would say, in terms of the social engagement, civilly.
Mm-hmm. I want to kind of jump ahead to a question I had for later, but seeing as we're talking about the impacts now, TC Energy has said that the composed compressor station for Salisms would be the largest source of air pollution on the pipeline. Where is the compressor station slated to be built?
Okay, so it's an 800-kilometer pipeline, roughly, give or take, and there would be 8 compressor stations. There's about one every 100 kilometers. So the one that's close by here, they're calling it the Kispeox Compressor Station. It would be on the east bank of the Skeena River near Utzon Creek. So about 14 kilometers northeast of Kispeox Village, about 8 kilometers from where I live. So the compressors keep the gas moving in the pipe, and because you can't plug them into the BC Hydro Grid because most of them are in remote places, they're powered by gas that's in the pipe, burned on site to basically run the compressors. So about 6% of the gas that's put in the pipe at its source would be burned. So just from compressor station operations, the 8 of them along the pipeline route, 2 million tons of greenhouse gases each year, which is about 3.5% of BC's present total, would add air pollution to the local area, equivalent to adding 18,000 more people to the local area. And that pollution would come from a source that's 20 hectares in size. Mm-hmm. So the way I've put it is, think of a slash burn, a nasty one, lasting for 40 years on the valley floor. That's a significant health risk to anybody. Those things are going to be trapped. They're not going to, the poisons are not going to disperse.
Yeah, not to mention people with pre-existing conditions or people who have had cancer before or people who are currently living with asthma, that it just puts them at an extreme risk.
Again, this is like a micro example of project splitting. There are all these toxins. Well, we'll talk about each one of them, but we won't talk about all of them. Mm-hmm. And we won't talk about the fact that you used to have clean air and now you don't. There's only a couple thousand of us. So, I mean, a couple thousand people in BC affected. And this is where, there's outrage. You can probably hear it in my voice, but there is outrage that people are saying, no, I matter. My kids matter. My neighbor matters. You are not going to walk over us and make us breathe poison because you want to ship this stuff to Asia and have it burn it, and then we're all going to breathe it anyway. You know, it just doesn't make sense. It just no longer makes sense.
So, you know, it's interesting when you're reading anything or you go on TC Energy website or you read about this project, there's just so many terms that are being used that they actually sound quite innocuous and harmless and almost even promising. Would you be able to tell me some of the terms, phrases or jargon that people really should be paying attention to when they're reading about this project or projects like this?
Sure. I think the very first one I did refer to this is that LNG is a clean source of energy. And there are numerous studies, and these were even available in 2006, 2007, that point to the fact that when you consider all of the emissions that happen along the fracked gas, natural gas, LNG pathway, and then having it burned as well, it's dirtier than coal. And not only that, but the chief component of the emissions, which is methane, and again, you can pick a number here, but the conservative number, which is one that the proponent used, it's about 20 times more potent than CO2 as a greenhouse gas, but there are actually numbers that now peg it as being up in the 80s, 80-fold more potent than CO2. So the methane component is actually a worse greenhouse gas than what you get from burning coal. So LNG is not clean, and in the project description for Solism's, five times it says that they want to displace the combustion of dirty sources of energy in Asia by clean, you know, renewable LNG from BC, and it's a lie. So the other thing, the major selling point, and federal government's on board with this too, it's not just the proponent and the BC government, is that this project would be net zero. So for that to even be true, there's a couple of pieces need to fall into place. They need to be connected to the BC hydro grid to power this project. Otherwise, they will be burning natural gas to power their conversion, just like the compressor stations do. The assumption there is that all the energy that comes from BC Hydro is green and renewable. It isn't. At peak times, they buy dirty energy from Alberta, from Washington State, places that still use coal to burn and to make electricity. So there's no guarantee that when you plug in your toaster, you're getting 100% clean energy. It's mostly, but it's not. It comes from the rivers. And then you want to say, well, is damming the Peace River, is that really clean? Because there's lots of emissions came from doing that, lots of carbon released and stuff. The second part of that is, even if BC Hydro were to provide the electricity for this LNG plant, it would need almost another site C dam to do it. It's about 9/11 of the capacity of a site C dam is what's needed to power Kisilism's LNG. So it's not going to be connected to the BC Hydro grid. If it's approved and they start construction and start operation when they're planning to, which is 2029, they want to be in operation, they will not be on the BC Hydro grid, and they will be burning natural gas, fracked gas, to power their conversion process. So there's some experts at the UN. We're looking at the fossil fuel industries and how they were describing their activities to see if they were actually greenwashing. In other words, trying to make things sound better than they are. And they found out, yes, they are. So if you're going to say you're net zero, you cannot be doing fossil fuel. Mm-hmm. It's like the two are like they're diametrically opposed. Not only that, when you go back to the emissions of Kisilism's LNG, they're not including the pipeline as part of their net zero. So they're going to look at their own emissions of the plant, but they're not going to include the pipeline.
Yeah.
So this is project splitting again. So net zero cannot be achieved. It's like saying you're going to go for a walk in the forest and not leave a footprint.
Was there anything that I didn't ask that you think is important for people to know, whether it be about the presentation that you gave on Monday, November 21st in Quispiox, or just anything else about this project that you think is not being said that needs to be heard?
I think I probably covered most of it here. I think that people are less willing to entertain this scale of disruption to their environment and their social fabric and their networks than they may have been in the past. And I think our politicians are out of step with that. And I think that it's possible there would be, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of people involved in trying to resist this kind of thing forced on the landscape. So I think that's something we all need to be aware of. But the feelings of a lot of people who live in these out-of-the-way places where these pipelines would go are like, no, we don't want to see this. Mm-hmm. And we know that we know what this brings now, because we've seen how you guys build a pipeline through the wilderness of BC.
And the public comment period is it open until December 1st? So that's on Friday?
Well, 11:59 p.m. December 1st, it closes. And there is a web portal on the BC Environmental Assessment Office website. And then you can type your comments in, to a window. You can be anonymous or not, if you like. You can attach pictures or documents if you want, maybe a photo of your house or where you live, and I don't want to see this trashed, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then what I would suggest doing before you submit it is copy what you've done, paste it into another application, and then send that to your MLA as well.
Yeah.
Because the MLA may not read the BCEAO compilation of comments, but hopefully they read their own inbox. And 2 days ago, I checked the comments that had been submitted to this point. There were 224 comments submitted, and 2 were in favor. So the overwhelming opposition to this project continues, mm-hmm. and yet it's probably going to be approved. The proponent wants to see it approved by February.
Graham, thank you so much for speaking with me and sharing all this information. It is so imperative for people to be able to understand more of the scope of this project from, I guess, large scale to extremely small scale, which you've done a really wonderful job of doing. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
If you would like to leave a comment on the BC Environmental Assessment Office, just Google BCEAO and then the word EPIC. And that will get you to a part of their website that lists all of their current projects. Then type in KSI and Solisms will pop up. You can go and submit comments on that page.
And so the push to get this project through, to get it approved so that PRGT, whose environmental certificate from the provincial government expires next year, mm-hmm. it's really rushed.
That's Tara Marsden speaking about the Prince Rupert Gas Transmission, or PRGT, a pipeline that has been approved to run through the Skeena region without any consultation from the nation she represents, the Gitanyau. This pipeline would threaten livelihoods of the Gitanyau, who are concerned that the timeline of this project looms too close for comfort. Tara is speaking about the 2 key areas of potential impact of the project on Gitanyau rights and interests, and what the Gitanyau hereditary chiefs are proposing in order to move forward for the potential Gitanyau review of the project under the WILP sustainability assessment process.
Hello, this is Tara Marsden. My Gitxan name is Nechkink, and I work with the Gitanyau Hereditary Chiefs, as well as other consulting work on lands and resources issues in the northwest of BC, and I live in Hazelton.
Excellent. Thanks so much for speaking with me. I was wondering if you could tell me about Gitanyau's call for a full cost accounting of all greenhouse gas emissions related to the Prince Rupert Gas Transmissions Pipeline in 2014, and how the Solisms projects reneged on this call.
Sure. So Gitanyau has been reviewing these projects for a while, as you said, since 2014. And there's 2 proposed pipelines at that time. It now looks like PRGT, held by TC Energy, is sort of the front runner, as it has an agreement with Solisms LNG terminal. And what we called for back then was avoiding what's now being called project splitting. And so when there's claims that LNG is going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions globally by getting places in Asia off of coal as a source of energy, they are making those claims by looking at projects in isolation. And so now that the Prince Rupert Gas Transmission Project is linked to Solisms, as opposed to what was proposed before, which was the Leelu Island Terminal, we would like to scope in Solisms into our overall assessment. And we would really call on other levels of government, the province and the federal government, because they have these commitments, these targets for greenhouse gas emission reductions, to look at the same type of assessment, not project splitting, but looking at the entire scope associated with gas extraction, production, shipping, and transportation.
What are the areas of concern or problematic or misleading characterization of climate impacts that you've noted on the project?
The first one is the project splitting, and so understanding things as a whole. The other is the mitigation approaches. And so they're relying on these uncertain frameworks, and this is very common in Crown-led assessments, is that there's always a future-looking promises. And so the mitigation measures aren't well described currently. That this project is likely going to jeopardize both provincial and federal climate targets. and that this is something that, you know, these, even though these are Crown targets, Gitanyahu supports these through our own WILP sustainability assessment process, because they are a starting place for reducing overall greenhouse gas emissions. One of these mitigation or ways that they propose to get to net zero for xylisms is to connect to the hydroelectricity grid. And so that, again, relies on available power. It may be power that is diverted from other needs and other community needs, especially in our region. And so there's just a lot of things that haven't been, I would say, worked out yet. And we also are looking at the fisheries component of this project. And so when the pipeline was proposed to go to Lilu Island, we learned about the significant habitat that was going to be impacted by the terminal. And in that case, it was the Skeena estuary. And as our salmon are migrating out from the rivers, they are quite sensitive. They're juveniles. They're sort of like teenagers. And they are transitioning from freshwater to saltwater. And they really are at a vulnerable life stage. And so in that case, the evidence brought forward was significant enough in terms of impacts that Lilu Island was eventually protected by the Port of Prince Rupert and is no longer being explored as an LNG terminal site. We don't know as much about the Nass estuary, but we're looking at the fisheries assessments done by the proponent so far. And in the area, the project area, they have found a number of juvenile salmon, including all species of salmon caught during their test surveys and caught during that time where they would likely be transitioning from the freshwater to the saltwater. So we're looking at a need for genetic analysis. And so Gitanyahu is upriver. So we're not talking about this being our territory. This is Nisga territory that they're proposing to develop. But we have upriver impacts because those salmon will migrate as adults up to spawn in our territory in the mid and upper Nass. And so we harvest salmon as adults, around 10,000 pieces per year of sockeye, and the Chinook are actually threatened. And so they did find juvenile Chinook in the project area. And there's just a big concern, I think, about the risk that it poses to salmon. Sockeye are doing quite well currently, but the Chinook are in a real serious state of decline and potential extinction in future years. And so we're looking at both of those pieces for this project.
The salmon and the livelihood of salmon was a big part of the WILP sustainability assessment process. Are there other elements to that process that you can share as well?
Sure. So our WILP sustainability assessment process was developed by our hereditary chiefs and our staff. And we are trying to run a parallel process, essentially. We've participated in many Crown or colonial government environmental assessments, and they have really been found wanting in terms of sustainability and the ability to say no. Most of these projects, once they're in an environmental assessment process with the Crown, they end up getting approved. It's just a matter of what mitigation measures or what conditions are put in an environmental certificate. But we would like, in accordance with the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, we would like the ability to say yes or no to projects that have an impact, a potential impact to Gitanyahu and our territories and the resources that may migrate through our territories. So we can scope and only look at those things that affect Gitanyahu. And so in this case, as I mentioned, it's the climate, the connection to the pipeline, as well as potential fisheries impacts to upriver resources that we utilize and harvest each year. Mm-hmm. Just on the fisheries, I did want to mention that whether you are Gitanyahu or Nisga or anyone who may rely on fisheries, and there are others like Lhkwalams and some Gitsan Wilp who have territory in the Nass as well, that this project, xylisms, would potentially destroy 25,000 meters squared of marine habitat, of fish, identified fish habitat. And so this includes bull kelp and some eelgrass, which is known to be critical habitat for juveniles. So there's more that needs to be explored in this, more that needs to be studied. And so the push to get this project through, to get it approved so that PRGT, whose environmental certificate from the provincial government expires next year, mm-hmm. it's really rushed. And so what we're saying is we need more time to understand the genetic analysis. What are the breakdowns in the conservation units? What is the true climate cost for the whole project, including the pipeline and the gas extraction? So it's really like we need a pause. We need more information and more understanding of this project if it's going to live up to its claims, which are to be, you know, net zero, Indigenous led, environmentally friendly, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And what offices are you working with in order to get this message out?
Sure. So we just learned about this sort of really formal connection between PRGT and Xelisms when they launched their application. They launched a public review period. And so we looked into it and found that there was potential impacts. At this point, we have not been identified as a participating nation or an affected nation by either the company or the provincial government. And so we just recently wrote to both the company and the provincial government saying, you know, these are our areas of concern. This is some immediate next steps forward to have a better understanding of impacts to Gitignau. And then we would like to potentially either review this project, but at a minimum, pause the provincial EA, because as I've just said, you know, we feel like there's a bit of a rush going on right now to get this approved in time for PRGT's expiration of their environmental certificate. And we also have the UN Declaration now being formally adopted by both provincial and federal governments. And so there's just a real change, and you know, PRGT needs a second look as well. And I think we just learned a lot from the experience of the Wet'suwet'en on the Coastal GasLink pipeline. Mm-hmm. So our chiefs are really concerned about how the Wet'suwet'en have been treated in their own territory by this company. So PRGT is TC Energy, which is the same company that's building Coastal GasLink. We've learned about some infractions, some violations, some release of sediment into spawning locations for salmon, as well as some impacts during the spawning window in their the crossing of some sensitive rivers and streams. And so there's just a lot of new information that really deserves, I would say, a thorough investigation and a much more thoughtful process as opposed to rushing things through, which is currently what we're looking at.
So, I mean, obviously you've done your research. You're so involved and informed about this project. Is there some place that people want to read more? If people want to read more about the impacts of this project, is there a place that you would direct them to go to read and understand the scope of this project as it will affect a number of nations and communities in Northern BC?
Sure. So we'll be putting up the information on our website later this week. We're just getting going in terms of informing our members and getting things out on social media, so there's some awareness. There is also the Environmental Assessment Office has their public comment page. And so you can go and actually look and see who has made comments so far and what those concerns are. Skeena Watershed Conservation Coalition is also, they've had an open house in Kispeox, and there's some information available on their social media and I think on their website too. But just like that, you know, LNG 101 and what this project means. And many people might be confused thinking this is a new pipeline, but it's actually an old pipeline being brought back to life by a new terminal. So just things like that. I think some people might have some misunderstandings, but that, you know, that this Xelisms project, it is Indigenous led. It's, you know, it is being advanced by the Niskalisms. So their members, I'm sure, would want to have more information about impacts to fisheries as well. And just generally, you know, the concerns around climate. So people hopefully will get more information and get involved and have their voices heard.
Thank you. I think that's a really good place to end my question portion. But was there anything that I didn't ask that you think is important for people to know?
I think I would just say that, you know, that these are linear projects and linear projects in our part of the world are definitely challenging because we have so many multiple First Nations, and some First Nations are hereditary led and some are elected led. And so there's a lot of, yeah, maybe potential confusion around that, but that at the end of the day, there is going to be multiple nations involved in a project like this. And that, you know, if we are going to live up to the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, that free, prior, and informed consent should be the requirement for all nations, not just the select few, and that we are all going to be living with the impacts of these projects and we should work together and not in isolation from one another.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Great. Thank you.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.